Welcome, everyone, to our Aztecs Hoopla podcast. I'm Jay Posner, sports editor of the Union Tribune, joined by our San Diego State basketball writer, Mark Ziegler. And we are taping this on Monday, 2 days after San Diego State completed its best regular season ever. I don't think there's any question about that. 28-1 overall record, 17-1 in the Mountain West, which was the best record by any school in that conference. And 3 days before the Aztecs will play in the Mountain West tournament against either Fresno State or Air Force. And Mark, this is kind of a weird tournament this year because we already know they're going to the NCAAs, and that hasn't happened a whole lot, I think, over the past several years. I mean, the Mountain West kind of fell into that sort of, is it a one-bid or a two-bid league? And it's a little different this year, right? I mean, we know what the Aztecs are doing, and there's really not a whole lot at stake here on the surface, other than I'm sure these guys want to win because as they've shown us, they are tremendously competitive and want to win regardless of sort of the stakes. You know, one seed, two seed, we can talk about, but otherwise, it's just about winning, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, really, the only sort of tangible things that they're looking at, I think, in this tournament are, you know, obviously they want to cut down nets. They've talked about that all year. They wanted 3 net cutting ceremonies, but I don't think they realize that you cut down nets after the Elite Eight.
That's right.
as well. But they're talking about 3, you know, the Mountain West Conference regular season championship. They already cut down nets for that. Then the conference tournament, that's the next thing they want to cut down nets for. And then the third, what they were talking about, was the national championship. The 2 other things that I think are kind of on the line here, number one, are they going to be a 1 or a 2 seed? They will be nothing else other than that. And I think if they win out, there's a very good chance they'll be a 1 seed. An outside chance, maybe somebody in the ACC just goes crazy and runs the table and beats a bunch of very good teams in that conference tournament. And the committee decides, okay, we'll put them ahead of San Diego State. But I don't think so if they run the table. And if they lose on Thursday against Fresno State or Air Force, they'll probably be a 2 seed. And the other thing that you know could happen here, and what the players, I think, are very much looking at, they don't like to look ahead, but in the semifinals on Friday evening, they could play UNLV. And they want another shot at them. They badly want another shot at them. That's the only team that beat them this year. So for obvious reasons, they want to play them. And so there's like a little mini motivation inside the tournament with
right.
that game.
And what about the idea of playing either, obviously they have no choice in the matter, but Fresno State and Air Force, I would think Fresno State would be a slight favorite in that game. Either team easier, harder for the Aztecs? They played Fresno twice this year. I think both games ended up being decided by 9 points, if I'm not mistaken. They only played Air Force once. It was on the road, and it was a pretty close game up until the last, 5 or 10 minutes, and the Aztecs kind of exploded there down the stretch and won going away. But you think, and Fresno, you know, you've got the Justin Hudson, Tim Shelton factor going in there as well. Do you think it matters to these guys on Thursday, or should it matter who they play Thursday?
Probably shouldn't. I think Air Force would be a little bit easier. I know that game was close, but it was at 7,000 feet. Put it down at, you know, 2,000 feet, and it's a much different game because they don't know who they're going to play. They wouldn't have as much prep time. But all they did in that game was basically play zone, which they did not play very well, by the way, instead of trying to prepare for all the back cuts. So it'll be interesting to see how they'd approach that game. You know, Fresno State's a little bit like getting a root canal. It's, you know, they know them. And both teams know each other very, very well, not just the coaching staffs, but the players and the teams, and kind of play similar defenses. And so, you know, they beat them twice. They were both grinded out, ugly, low-scoring games. And I think, you know, they just kind of like, oh, we got to go through this again. But they should be able to win either of them. I think, you know, probably the easier the 2 would be Air Force, though.
Right. I do want to go back real quick to the Nevada game on Saturday because – you know, you're basically the only media member from San Diego who goes to these games and can actually take us inside the arena and sort of tell us what it was like there. And I saw you, it looked like you were sitting on the baseline right behind the basket next to the Aztec bench. And on TV, at least, it sounded really loud in there. I mean, it sounded almost Viejas loud at times in there. So take us inside the arena on Saturday night, and what was it like, you know, being in there, and what was it like for the Aztecs and for them to fall down by 13 points and still come back and win seemed to say an awful lot about this team.
Yeah, so I was sitting right on the baseline right next to the Aztecs bench. The students were directly behind me. the band was directly behind me and the cheerleaders were right in front of me. And so it's just, I mean, you want to talk about atmosphere in a college environment. I mean, it was all right there. And the first play of the game for Nevada, Jalen Harris, who got player of the year votes actually, comes downhill and jumps into Yanni Wetzel, draws a foul and banks in a short shot. And the place just goes nuts. And it just kind of keeps building from there. And a lot of times when San Diego State's gone into a tough, hostile environment, they've got off to good starts and kind of taken the crowd out of it. They did that in New Mexico. They did that at Boise State.
Right, and
they did that even at Utah State a little bit. And so it didn't happen here. They fell behind. They're down 9.5, and that just got the crowd going. And so it was a really, really different environment than some of their other road wins just because of the engagement of the crowd. And the thing that really struck me is there's this one student, couple of students were just, you know, like they all do. They just are completely on the visiting team. And they were just yelling at the Aztecs all game. And you could hear them pretty well. A guy had a pretty big booming voice. And as the final seconds ticked off, I put this quote in my story. He just said, man, 22 is a baller. I'll admit that. I mean, he just had no other thing to say, but give props to Malachi Flynn for how he played in that game and how he took it over. But I really think, I mean, of all their wins this season, this is right up there with any of them. And it was weird because it really didn't mean anything. They already clinched the conference title and it didn't change any seedings or anything. But just based on what happened the previous week, and there were a lot of doubters. And I'm sure, you know, the players have a lot of confidence and a lot of swagger, but I'm sure deep down there's some doubts internally as well. And to prove the outside world kind of wrong about, you know, this team's falling apart and maybe some of their own doubts, I think was a big, big deal.
And they had to, you know, doubt at least a little bit in Malachi Flynn. I mean, he had a couple games, and not that the players and everybody else doesn't think he's had a phenomenal season and he's a great player and all that, but, you know, a couple games in a row, he didn't shoot well. And I think, you know, he got some points late with some free throws, made a couple shots against Colorado State, but clearly didn't look like the same player that we had seen most of the season. But that performance on Saturday was, you know, pretty much as good as you're going to see from a college player. Did you get any sense beforehand or even, you know, during the early part? I mean, I guess the early part of the game, you got a sense because he kept making shots, which he hadn't been doing. But did you have any sense that something like that was coming, or was that just a case where, you know, look, these guys are human. They have a couple off nights, and then he got back to just sort of being the player that we've seen all year.
Well, it's interesting because Coach Brian Dutcher laid down a little bit of a gauntlet his media comments before leading up to the game, and said, you know, look, when Malachi Flynn shoots X of X, I can't remember what he said, which game he picked out, and KJ Fagan is shooting this, you know, and your two veteran guards aren't shooting well, man, you're not going to win. You know, we need him to make shots.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of a challenge. And he laid out for those guys kind of saying, look, our problems are as simple as you guys aren't making shots. So start making shots. And they did. And I mean, they came out between them. They made their first six at the half. I think they had, 28 of their 35 points.
35,
maybe.
Right. And there were only like three guys who had scored, I think. I think it was just those guys and Mitchell who had even scored, I think, at halftime.
And so they pretty much answered that very early. And as you mentioned, you know, the fact that he started scoring early helped him. You know, he's been this way his whole career. I've even talked with his high school coach. He said it was the same thing. He was on a talented high school team, very, very talented, Bellman Prep in Tacoma. And they competed for state titles every year. And he said, you know, he would distribute and defer. And we get in the second half and then he'd start getting going. But there's a lot of games he'd have 4, 6, or 8 points at the half, and he'd end up with 30. And, you know, he did that quite a bit this season. He had 28 against Iowa after doing nothing in the first half. And so that's kind of been his trend. And for him to get going early, he talked about that afterwards, really kind of engaged him and got him really rolling. And so I think that was a little sense before the game. But once those two hit their first couple shots, I knew it was on.
Right. And KJ showed something, you know, during the game. You know, anytime somebody rolls their ankle like that, you're always concerned. You're concerned it's gonna swell up, and you know, you never know how bad it is. It always looks, I'm sure it looks worse on TV even when they, you know, it goes into slow motion and you see it turn and roll and you're like, oh, geez, I wouldn't want that to happen. But he was only out for a couple minutes, right, and went to the locker room and came right back in. Did he say anything afterward about how bad it was and if he was concerned at all going forward?
Yeah, I asked him what the pain was, and he said it was on a, you know, every basketball player has rolled their ankle, so they know, mm-hmm. you know, which ones are bad and which ones aren't. He did roll it kind of outward, which is the best way to do it. And there's no best way to roll your ankle, but if you're going to do it that way. So it's not the dreaded high ankle sprain that we hear about. He said the pain was like a 5 or 6 on a scale of 10. And, you know, but this is a, you know, this is an elite athlete telling you that. For you and me, we'd probably be rolling around like a baby holding our ankle. But he went back to the locker room, and he first came, you know, it took him a long time to get up. And then when he got up, he couldn't put any pressure on it, and he kind of hobbled over the bench. When the head coach goes out there, then you're really concerned about the injury. And because head coaches have been through these long enough, particularly a guy like Brian Dutcher, to know what's bad and what's not. So he, you know, it looked bad, and he kind of hesitated at the bench. And the trainer, Sergio Ibarra, it was funny because I was sitting right there, had left to go to the locker room, and KJ hadn't followed him. So he came back out. He's like, come on, let's go. And KJ's like, what are we doing? He goes, I'm going to go retape it. And he was back out quickly. I talked to Sergio on the flight home. He sat across the aisle from me, and I said, how quickly can you tape an ankle? He goes, I've actually timed myself 45 seconds.
Wow.
And he just retaped the ankle, and he said, you know, there's a lot of mental toughness there. And, you know, and the thing about if you roll it outside, and again, I'm not a doctor, but I know that if you roll it that way, you sometimes have a chance, you know, you'll see like it in rec games, guys will lace up their shoes really tight. He had the advantage of getting it taped. You can get it taped and you can get through the game. And the question is what happens the next day and the next day and the next day. But the next morning he was, you know, he had his shoe loosened at the airport and he was kind of hobbling through the airport, but it wasn't bad. It wasn't like really, really noticeable. So he said, I think I'll be perfectly fine by Thursday to play. And I, you know, knowing him, if he did that in that game, I'd be shocked if he's out on the floor Thursday.
Right, and you don't think they would do anything like sort of be careful and even sit him out just as a precaution at this point? I mean, the one thing is they do have a 2-week layoff. I mean, no matter how many days, whatever happens in this tournament, I mean, they're not going to play again until March 20th. So either just under or right about 2 weeks before their next game. So do you think that plays a little bit of a role in how much he plays this week, that if they were playing the following week, maybe Dutcher would be just a little bit more careful?
Yeah, I think so. And you know, you could see in Dutcher's comments afterwards, I said, what's going through your mind when, you know, you're basically the heart and soul of your team. Maybe you're not your leading scorer, but he's really the leader of the team, and he's the guts of this team. Goes down like that, and he said, all I could think about is, oh, thank goodness we got 20 days to the NCAA tournament. And he goes, yeah, he had already in his mind taken him out of the Mountain West tournament. It's like, it's okay, he won't play now. We don't have to worry about that. We don't need him for that, but we need him for the NCAA tournament. But, you know, the thing about it, I'm sure they'll be cautious, and I'm sure there'll probably be more examinations. I don't know if they'll get an MRI or not, but they'll try to sort of evaluate the extent of it, and if it's garden variety or if it's something worse. But the other factor is, look, this guy's a fifth-year senior. He's never played. He's played on losing teams in college his whole life. He is just reveling in the fact that they're winning. And keeping him off the floor with a chance to win a conference tournament title, something he's never done
right,
and probably dreamed about, is going to be hard to do. And I think they'll probably trust his judgment as much as anybody's judgment on this call.
Right, that makes sense. All Mountain West, the media poll, media votes were announced Monday morning. And as expected, Malachi Flynn, Player of the Year, Brian Dutcher, Coach of the Year, Flynn's on the first team, the only Aztec on the first team. And I know you said you voted for KJ Fagan as the Defensive Player of the Year. He did not get that award. Were you surprised at all? And you know, I'm never one to get worked up about awards, but I just to ask a question, were you surprised at all that only one Aztec's on the first team and that Fagan didn't win Defensive Player of the Year, or did you kind of see that coming just in a sense because of the balance that the Aztecs have had all year, and also that, you know, it's as you've written about, it's kind of hard to have defensive stats for someone like Fagan as opposed to a guy who blocks a lot of shots?
Yeah, the biggest surprise to me was that Fagan didn't get more votes. And what was interesting is that Malachi Flynn got 2 votes and Fagan got 2 votes each. And there's only 11 votes in the media voting. There's 11 ballots. And in cities where there's multiple beat writers, they share the ballot. So there's more input, but it only counts as one. So what was interesting about that is Malachi Flynn is a good defender, but he's not on the same level or same kind of defender as KJ is. Mm-hmm. He generally does not guard the best perimeter player on the other team. And anyone who watches San Diego State's games closely should know that. So, but he has more steals, maybe because he can slack off a little bit and get in the gaps and sneak up behind somebody and doesn't have to worry quite as much about his player scoring, as KJ is just completely locking up that player, and that's his sole purpose on the floor. A little bit surprising that KJ, if you're going to vote for a San Diego State player, didn't get all those votes. But, you know, KJ is a very good player. He was Defensive Player of the Year last year. And while he was hurt for most of the early part of the season, he has started to play very well, and no coincidence, so is Utah State. So, it's hard to argue with that, but I really think my whole reasoning is I like to pick the best defensive player on the best defensive team. And there's no doubt San Diego State's the best defensive team by a mile. Any metric you want to look at, any statistic you want to look at, they're the best defensive team in the league. They went 17-1 for a reason and 9-0 on the road. And KJ was by far the best defensive player. And if you ask any of the coaches that, they tell you the same thing.
And I think you voted Mitchell on the first team and KJ on the second team. Is that correct?
Yeah, and this is probably the basketball coach in me. There's a lot of times, and I don't want to knock the rest of the media because they have different ways of voting. Everyone has different ways of voting. I always vote Coach of the Year, for example, whoever wins the league. I think you should be Coach of the Year. Mm-hmm. And usually Player of the Year, I usually vote for the best player on the best team. But people have different ways of doing it. But the coach in me looks at a defensive player and really values him. And also, I mean, I have a much different view of KJ Fagan than maybe outsiders do, because I'm there every day of practice and I'm there with the team. I'm at shoot-arounds and I see the value he brings as a leader and also the value he brings as a defender. So the scoring stats really don't mean much to me. Although he did have some big games. And Matt Mitchell, I think, you know, one difference between the coaches awards, which will come out later this week, and the media awards, is the media awards are primarily prioritizing conference statistics, but also looking at the whole season. And in that regard, you know, Matt didn't start for the first half of the season, and he really came on sort of in the middle of the conference season. And so he might get more votes from the coaches just because of the format than he did from the media. But I felt like he was a first-team player, and I thought that Yanni Wetzel was a second-team player. But, you know, at that point, I mean, you're talking about 15 players out of hundreds and hundreds of players in the league, and, you start to split hairs at that point. There's a lot of good players. And then you also have the question of a good player on a bad team, and how good is that player?
Right. So, anyway, one last thing before we move on, and I know you're going to write about this tomorrow, and it'll be in the paper Wednesday, probably be online tomorrow. But the tournament is early this year, and it's early because of a convention in Las Vegas. You can explain a little bit more of that. But I think you wrote about this before, there was talk about moving the tournament to San Diego and play, or maybe elsewhere as well, but certainly San Diego seemed to make sense, and play at the normal time, which would have been a week from now. Explain what happened, what's happening, and you know, is this still a case of what you mentioned last week, where everything kind of revolves around the fact that the Mountain West gets money from the Las Vegas Tourism Bureau, and so they're just going to play it in Las Vegas and at the Thomas and Mack, pretty much come hell or high water or construction convention or whatever might be the case?
Yeah, so every 3 years in Vegas, they have, I think it's called ConAg. It's a massive, massive international contractors convention. And I mean, when I say massive, 120,000 participants. And even in Vegas, which has a lot of big conventions, that's big.
Right.
And it falls in the same week that you had the Mount West Conference tournament, the Pac-12 tournament. Obviously, the WAC tournament is not bringing a ton of fans, but the Pac-12 is. And the Mountain West in some years brings a fair amount of fans. And so they did this 3 years ago, and they kept it the same week. And it was a disaster because the Mountain West, had, as you mentioned earlier, had fallen sort of in the one-bid league. status, and a lot of fans weren't coming. And then when they looked at the hotel prices, I mean, literally, I looked, it was $500 a night for a bad hotel on the Strip. And that's if you could get a room. And fans just said, screw it, I'm not going to go. And so they didn't, and the attendance was down. And so they came up with three options. One was to keep it the same week and just suck it up with the hotels and try to get people to book early. Another was to move to San Diego and play in Vegas Arena, just on a one-off deal. And the other was to go somewhere else neutral. And the city that popped up was Phoenix. And so they formed a committee. Stacey Terry, the women's basketball coach at San Diego State, was on it. And some athletic directors had input, some of the coaches, some other ADs. And they looked at all the different scenarios. And obviously the fourth scenario was what they're doing, which is move it up a week and keep it in Las Vegas. And they kept it in Las Vegas. And Stacey said the other day that, you know, a lot of it was because just the finances of the hotels in San Diego versus the deals they would get on hotels in Las Vegas, where there are obviously quite a few hotels, and this week isn't a big week, so they could offer better deals to the Convention Bureau. And so they decided to keep it. But, I mean, San Diego, people were so worried about, well, can't play in San Diego because they'll have a home court advantage. Well, who's the hottest team in the league right now? It's UNLV, and they're playing in their home building. And now they have not had great success in the tournament, but, you know, if you're Boise State's coach, what are you thinking right now? You just were down 27 of them a week ago in Thomas and Mack, and now you got to play them in the first game, the quarterfinals. So it'll be interesting to see if there's more griping about it, and 3 years from now they take another run at San Diego, and maybe they decide to come. But it's interesting to see how the Mountain West makes decisions, and you would think that maybe just for 1 year they'd come to San Diego, and this would have been the perfect year because they won the tournament. I know they won the regular season, and who could argue with them getting to host the tournament?
Right, and obviously there would have been no problem. There would have been no problem selling tickets for anybody. I do think, you know, hotels are probably more expensive here, so maybe that factored in. Who knows? But it would have been nice to have it here. But I guess the Aztecs and their fans will have to settle for just being conference champions, and, you know, in a few days maybe conference tournament champions as well. So anyway, I know you are off to Vegas this week, and it should be interesting to follow what's going on there, and then we will come back and do one of these maybe probably next Monday and talk about what happened in Las Vegas and what the Aztecs' plans are for the layoff that they're going to face between that and the NCAA tournament. So I want to thank everyone for listening, and please come back and join us next week.